This episode is sponsored by Paleo Valley. Paleo Valley's meat sticks have been a lifesaver during this hot summer. Since they're shelf-stable, I always have 3 Paleo Valley meat sticks in my bag at all times. It's also been perfect for my boys' lunch boxes. I love Paleo Valley's grass-finished beef sticks and pasture-raised turkey sticks because they support U.S. family farmers that focus on regenerative agriculture. These meat sticks are from animals that have never been fed grains, soy, corn, or GMOs, and have never been given antibiotics. The spices in these meat sticks are also 100% organic. The sticks come in 5 different flavors, and my favorite is the original beef stick, and my boys love the teriyaki beef sticks and the original pasture-raised turkey stick. Paleo Valley's meat sticks are a perfect snack and frankly a great value without skimping on quality. Each stick is about $2 with our discount code, and it comes in a 10-pack bag. Make sure to support this podcast and head over to paleovalley.com/CATG and use code CATG to get 15% off your first order. Thanks for listening and supporting the Cutting Against the Grain podcast. Laura and I are just going to be talking really candid. This is what this podcast is all about.
It's one thing to say, I want to eat something else that's not meat. It's a whole other thing to say, you need to eat something else that's not meat.
If you notice that you're jumping from diet to diet, at a certain point, you have to wonder, the only common denominator is me.
Get outside, go for a walk, get some vitamin D, breathe some fresh air, and stay happy and healthy and take care of yourselves.
Let's just have some real talk. Welcome to the Cutting Against the Grain podcast. Thanks for joining the Cutting Against the Grain podcast. My name is Judy Cho, and I'm here with my friend and co-host Laura Spath. And today we are going to touch upon when diets get hard, when we just want to do something other than the diet that we've laid out for ourselves. It's the middle of January, and oftentimes this is when people start veering from their resolutions, where all the excitement that we had when we started writing our resolutions start showing the true colors, and that it may not always be easy. And so this conversation is really to just talk about, what do you do when things get hard? So for you, Laura, when you know you started carnivore and keto, what did you do when things got hard? How did you go about those moments?
I mean, in the past, before kind of like things clicked, I didn't do it very well, you know, and I would fall off the wagon, and then that kind of would derail me for a while. And I think that, you know, having results helps. The hard part is, you know, like results can be really motivating and they can help you push forward. And then again, the hard part is like, you know, the first week everybody starts this new January diet and you lose weight. And then about the second week, all that water weight stopped. And then you're kind of maybe stalled the second week. It's less exciting. It's getting a little more boring. Everybody else has fallen off their New Year's resolutions and kind of trying to get you to do the same thing. And so the hard part then is like, you've stalled. It's not fun anymore. It's not new anymore. How do you keep going then? And right. So it's really knowing yourself. I have a couple of very specific things I've learned over the years. So, you know, I always talk about on this podcast, but just the tomorrow, like I won't cheat today. I'll just do it tomorrow, or I'll just do it next time. If I can just go one more day, and then usually future me is able to handle it better. But, you know, I have a couple of very specific things that I can do to help push me forward. And more recently, I would say like in the last year, I've been using ketones and checking my blood glucose and my ketones to try to help with that. I don't check those numbers. Like it's not a requirement to be good on carnivore or even to be in ketosis, but those numbers are motivating to me because I can kind of tell myself in the moment, like if you cheat now, or for me, if it's like, if you snack on a bunch of stuff at 8 PM, think about what that's going to do to your numbers tomorrow morning. Or think about what that's going to do to your blood sugar tomorrow morning and where you're going to end up. So kind of standing in the kitchen in the evenings when I'm wanting to grab in the fridge, but taking that 2 minutes to like check my blood glucose and check my ketones usually makes me motivated. Either I don't like the numbers, so I better push through because I want them to get better, or it's like, dang, that's a really good number and I'm proud of that number. I worked hard for that number. I want to keep it going and it's not worth derailing it by snacking on a bunch of stuff, you know, at 8 o'clock at night, because I know it's going to throw me off for the next day. So that would be like one small thing, whether it's, you don't have to check your ketones, but recently that's been something that's been helpful and motivating to me.
Whether even if it's not for to stay in ketosis, but just having some type of marker or measurement that you can look at and then it helping you to stay motivated. I think that's why a lot of these off-label uses of CGMs is powerful. It's not because everyone is diabetic that's using it. It's because it helps people stay in check of, oh, these foods make my food, my blood sugar go up, or I had a day of eating off plan and my blood sugar was constantly high. And it's safe to assume then that my insulin is also high, which is not ideal for metabolic health. So for all these reasons, it's good to track, even if you're not using it for the intention of that, I guess, that tool. And as long as it's motivating, that's not a bad thing.
And I think we have to be careful not to get obsessed with the numbers or put too much stock in them. If I show up, you know, and my ketones are high versus my ketones are low, either way, I'm showing something. I clearly haven't binged on carbs, but it's an accountability piece for me to be able to check in with that. And that is really what I use it for. And the same thing goes for tracking. I don't track my calories or my food. I don't input them into a tracker on a regular basis. If I am mentally struggling, if I feel like I'm spiraling, if I feel like I'm, you know, eating too often, especially for me, and maybe that food is like really adding up to how much I'm actually eating in a day, tracking is that accountability piece that I can pull in to look at myself. You know, I went through the last few days and have just been tracking, and in my head, I'm like, oh, I'm eating this taco bowl and I probably put like 2 tablespoons of sour cream on it and 1/4 cup of cheese and I put this stuff on it. In your head, you're like, that's not really a lot. So I eat several times throughout the day. Well, when I actually measured, like I just ate what I wanted, but I measured it as I was eating. My 2 tablespoons of sour cream was really like 1/3 of a cup that I was consuming during my meal. Now there's nothing wrong with that. It's not like I'm now going to make a change to like eat less sour cream. I could, but I also could make other adjustments of, I have to cut out the snacks outside of this window, or I don't know. For me, the knowledge of it is important. I'm not tracking to hit a certain calorie point for the day. It just gives me some motivation and that's it. And then there's the accountability piece of, am I going to eat another meal for the day? Clearly I had not eaten enough. So, you know, I sit there with my lunch. I added up my whole lunch. It was like 1,000 calories for the day. If that was my only meal, it's pretty under eating and it could cause me issues over time. So I knew in my head that this is not enough food to sustain me for the day. If I don't proactively eat something like an early dinner, 8 o'clock at night tonight, first thing tomorrow morning, I'm going to be hungry and I'm going to start getting cranky and I'm going to start looking in the fridge and looking in the pantry. And then the TV commercials about ordering pizza are going to look a lot more tempting. And all of those things are going to be harder to resist because I'm undernourished. And so something like tracking almost helps me learn, are you under eating? You know, if I added up all the food that I was eating, maybe it's 3,000 calories for the day. Well, clearly that's overeating. And maybe that's why I'm not losing weight and I need to make adjustments on how often I'm eating or how much I'm eating. So again, this is more about motivation, but for me, a couple technical things that I can do really help hold me personally accountable and bring a lot of knowledge to it. And then those are things that are also going to help me from a mental side, kind of address my goals and motivations. It helps to give me those daily wins when the scale's not moving. And then usually by really dialing in on a couple technical things, I can get the scale moving again.
Yeah, I think these are all good things. When we track, we're able to see, you know, just get a pulse of what's going on. I always think that for my clients, especially if the diet starts getting hard, meaning that they want to eat other things or they're just not as satiated, I have them track their what they're eating in a day. And oftentimes they're under eating. And a lot of times the under eating is what causes us to then crave other foods. We feel that we're not satiated enough. And so in the evening, that's where we might want to snack on other things. But if we had eaten sufficiently at our meals, a lot of times that won't happen, especially the physical side of it all. And so it's really important to make sure you're nourished. And one way you can do that is by tracking initially, just to understand, if I'm eating carnivore for the first time in my life, I don't know how much meat that I need to be eating. And so I would highly recommend at least getting an idea of how much meat you should be eating and maybe how much added fat if you need to. Also include that. And then you can kind of just go by your hunger. If you do have moments where it gets hard, you can figure out, well, am I not eating enough? Am I emotionally angry? Are these the reasons why I'm feeling hungry? And then you can check in with yourself to see, is it a true hunger thing that you're struggling, or is it that it's an emotional thing? And then if it is emotional, then you can wonder, what can I do to take care of this emotion if it's because you're having a bad day? I mean, we have podcast episodes where we talk about what to do when you're stressed. Instead of turning to food, there's other things you can do. But I think that's where for you, Laura, when you track, I think it's important because it helps us to just understand, is it the amount of food or the lack of food that we're eating that is making this diet now harder to follow.
Right. And I think that that's one of the benefits of this diet and why it's sustainable for so many people, myself included, why I've been able to keep this up for so many years, is that because when you're eating the right amount, it is satiating, right, which means you're not hungry all the time. It's why we can't lose weight with this extreme restriction on living on salads and chicken breast all the time, because your body's not getting the nutrients that it needs and it's not satisfied. So then you're fighting the physical hunger and the emotional hunger of like being just stressed and sad and hungry, and then normal life stresses. But that's it. What you mentioned is key, when there's the emotional component and the physical component. And the very first thing we have to do is address the physical component, right, and make sure that you are physically satisfied and not hungry. And I spent a year just like focusing on losing weight from a physical standpoint, eating and not eating and all that. But then there's a second layer, and that comes when you're ready for it. When you're no longer hungry, right? This is why people say eat as much meat as you need to in the beginning.
Right.
You might gain weight, but you also have to address the physical hunger first. And then once you realize you're not physically hungry, you can say, okay, why am I still eating? Because I personally don't have to be physically hungry to eat, yeah, at all. I could eat forever, sometimes it feels like. But there's an emotional reason why I'm eating a lot of times. And so until I've addressed the physical hunger, I can't begin to work on the emotional issues of why I'm eating, because maybe I physically need to, right? And so I think that's definitely the key, and where the carnivore element can really kind of attack that early and quickly, is because your body should be physically satisfied pretty quickly into this, within a few days. I mean, you really shouldn't be feeling this major hunger once you know, let's say a week in after you get off of those carb cravings.
Yeah, there's definitely a difference between the physical cravings and emotional. I mean, when it's physical, it could be hormonal, it could be the leptin, it could be ghrelin, it could be your body is just having you crave the things that will actually make you go and get some food. And so when you actually fill your body with the right nutrients, a good amount of meat and an abundance of fat, and you fuel your body, you still can have the emotional cravings, the, oh, it would be so nice to have a cake after or some type of dessert. And that is a lot of times the emotional, because when you actually check in with yourself and say, am I really hungry right now? Oftentimes, if you've fueled yourself with meat, you won't feel that level of hunger. In my eating disorder facilities, one thing they would gauge is by asking yourself, Laura, what is a food that you really don't care for? And if you're super hungry, maybe you'll have a bite of it, and let's make it not meat. So for me, back then, it was a red apple. So I didn't really care for red apples, but if I was really hungry, maybe I'll grab one and I'll eat it. So is there a food like that for you?
I mean, I think in the past, it was just anything healthy, you know, like, I don't know, like, anything that would be some type of a vegetable or maybe just back then, maybe it was meat. Like maybe I really, that's actually, I'll say that maybe it was meat in the past where I really never really had a craving for meat. All I wanted was the ultra processed foods and fast foods. But if I was really hungry, maybe then chicken sounded good.
Okay.
When in the past, then none of those things sounded good to me really ever, unless I was really hungry.
Yeah. And that makes sense. That's why a lot of people that are on carnivore and they're snacking a lot, they don't want that meal of meat because they're like, I'm not really craving anything. And usually it's because they're snacking on other foods. So let's say it's the chicken breast. The gauge that they would recommend us do is that if you are wanting to snack, the question would be, does a chicken breast sound satisfying to you? And if it doesn't, then you're probably not hungry. And so I used to use that when I left the eating disorder facilities of, am I hungry or is this an emotional hunger? And then I would ask myself, do I want to eat that red apple? And if I didn't, then I knew that it wasn't an actual physical hunger. And that's how you really can differentiate the hunger cues of a physical hunger versus emotional. And there's a lot more things you could do that you can check in with yourself while you're eating and things like that. It's really important to satiate the physical hunger so that when emotional hunger comes, which is the hardest part, I think, instead of turning to like a margarita at the end of the night because you had a hard week, figuring out what else are you going to turn to. And so those things are really important. And it's a process. It's initially, we are just trying to get our bodies fed. But over time, then we can work on the emotional. If you don't change an old habit that you turn to for comfort, let's say it was chips or alcohol or whatever it may be, you're going to always go back to it when things get hard. And that's why I think a lot of people during COVID, as soon as we had the lockdowns, we all went back to eating non-meat-based foods because that was our go-to when in times of stress.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, once you've been doing this in the beginning, you're motivated by wanting to see results and it's new and it's exciting and you have a plan. I think the longer we go into this, a couple weeks in, people lose their idea of the plan. They've stopped preparing ahead as much. They're trying to just go back to living their normal lives without making meal preparation and the thought ahead such a priority. And you kind of lose that proactiveness that you're doing. And then the quick foods come about or the temptations come in that you weren't expecting, or even just you feel like you're missing out. Your friends are going out for tacos or you're doing something else, or it's somebody's birthday comes up. And you really get frustrated because you feel like you're missing out on something exciting or something fun or something that you've loved before. And then this overwhelming, for me, always this overwhelming sense of like, I'm never going to get to do this ever again. I can't do this anymore. I have to experience that food one more time and then I'll be better. And then I can stick to it again. And like that sense of urgency that's created sometimes by the circumstances that we're in, by the people that we're around, or by just the actual seasonality. Seasonal treats always got me the worst because I would just feel this overwhelming sense of urgency to feel like I needed to indulge in it because it wasn't going to be around for so much longer. And having to get past that and get past those first Valentine's Day I didn't even stick to my New Year's resolution the year that I actually stuck to this diet. I made it through January. It was Penelope's birthday at the end of January, and I completely fell off the wagon until mid-March again. And then I started in March, and getting through my first Easter was like one of my biggest accomplishments in life, was getting through my very first Easter without having any treats whatsoever. And knowing that those same ones are going to be there every single year. And by the time the next Easter rolled around and the next Easter rolled around, like it just wasn't as appealing to me anymore. And kind of delaying those things. So, you know, I work in sales. I teach people how to create a sense of urgency for their customers and to try to get them to indulge in the moment or whatever it is that you're trying to sell. And that's what those, you know, companies are trying to do, or your friends want to feel like they're not alone in the decisions that they're making. And so they want you to indulge with them as well, which is why surrounding yourself with positive people and not those that are just trying to get you to do what they're doing is so hard.
I'm a fan of the planning ahead so that when we have these moments where it becomes hard, where we feel the grieving of, well, now it's spring and here's these certain foods I used to eat and then it's summer. And if we have a plan and we figure out what the pros and cons list is, for example, of why I wanted to start carnivore in the first place. And if you were to read that during the times it gets hard, where the day-to-day becomes really hard to get through, then you can see, okay, so all the pros are that I may be able to no longer have joint pain. I could sleep through the night. I can have balanced hormones. And then the cons are all of these other things. Maybe you struggled with depression. You had metabolic disease. You had high blood pressure and you're trying to get off medication because you just don't feel well. For some people, when they read those during these moments where it's just hard, maybe they can indulge in a little bit of something that they wanted to, but then they can just kind of go back to staying carnivore because it's worth it if they see that list. It's not always easy, but one other tip I usually recommend is trying to break the day into quadrants. So let's say you, for breakfast, you just said, I don't care, I'm just going to eat whatever I do. And so you had a donut or something. And instead of saying the whole day is messed up now, I think it's Gretchen Rubin that talks about breaking the day into quadrants. So if you think of there's four periods of a day. So let's say your first part of the day, so 1/4 of the day is gone. But now you can redo the second part and you can eat meat-based. For lunch, you can eat a meat-based meal and just move on from it. I think a lot of times we get trapped where we think, oh, well, we messed up today. Let's just eat whatever we want. And then the next day, it becomes that much harder to get back on track. And then 2 days becomes really difficult to pick up.
And that's what, I mean, as simple as like, it's a one day thing. This is supposed to be like my daughter's birthday and I have like a piece of cake with her and probably indulge in a bunch of other treats, whenever that was. And, but then the next day it's like, well, that was a Friday. So then I might as well wait until Monday. Well, then that's like the 30th. So let's wait until the first of the month. And then you just, starting is hard,
right?
Like starting out that first week of detoxing off the carbs and getting everything out of your system. And like, I sleep like terrible. And like anytime that I have a bunch of carbs and I go without, like starting a diet is really hard. And that first week is hard. And so then you get frustrated. Like, I don't want to go through that again. It's easier to kind of stay here in this like mediocre land, or I feel just generally miserable all the time. Because it's going to get, you know, it might get worse before it gets better again. And it takes a couple of weeks for things to be in that home stretch. And that's where I think where people are at maybe this month is that things are going really well. Anytime that I've had a time where I just like completely go off the rails, like intentionally, it's because I'm almost too confident. It's like, it's been 3 weeks. I've lost 20 pounds. This is great. I deserve this. I can very easily have a cheat day and then get back on track the next day, no problem. Like that's going to be totally simple because I'm in such a strong place, and it never works out that way. You have to tell yourself, like, this is, you are in a strong place. Don't start over again, or don't let it be something where you convince yourself you can handle one day or one moment or one meal, because most of us, if you're like me, can't do that. Or we wouldn't have gotten ourselves into the place where we were, things were so out of control in the first place. And you're in this strong place. Don't use it to indulge in something. Use it to push you forward. There's never a time when a cheat day is going to help you further your weight loss or health goals. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to kickstart your metabolism again. It's not going to get it out of your system.
Right.
It's not going to kind of give you a break for a minute. None of those things are going to happen. Consistency means more than anything else.
I mean, you can have a future cheat day planned and just not use it. But that for some people is motivating, thinking,
yeah,
okay, this summer I will have a day of cheating or have a day of eating off plan because I deserve it. And so they will look towards that. And that will be their, I guess, short-term goal to keep going on this diet. A lot of times I notice that when that day actually comes, a lot of people don't go all in because they're feeling so good. So they may have maybe just a margarita, or they'll have some chips or something like that, but they may not go all out. You just have to realize where you are in your journey into health and why you're doing a carnivore diet. For me, if I wanted to eat some keto treats in the beginning, I would have not been able to do carnivore. One of the reasons I started carnivore was because the 20 grams of carbs on a ketogenic diet was causing me to eventually binge. I needed it to be an absolute no that carbs were not on the table. And that made me finally heal from my eating disorder, ironically, and to heal a lot of what was making me struggle. So I couldn't have cheat days. I couldn't have anything sweet. Otherwise, I would have never healed the way I did. But I think for Laura, and we've talked about this before, but you needed a little bit of like the Diet Coke or these other like sugar-free items to be a bridge for you so that you can even eat this way.
Yeah, I definitely think that's it. There are people who, and there are a lot of people in this community who talk about like zero sweeteners, nothing ever, no sugar-free gum, like none of those things, because those are all triggers for you. Right. And that's exactly what you fall into, right? Those things were not helpful for you. Where something like myself, those were the bridge foods that I needed to help break that. I used to have dessert after every single meal, and that 2 p.m. snack or that 2 p.m., you know, Sonic Blast, like all those things were my, I needed something to bridge that because the cravings were just overwhelming at times. And so in the very beginning, I did need something to bridge to help me break the habit of like wanting that after every meal. And obviously over time, like I realized I didn't even want the gum anymore and I didn't even want those things, but I needed something to kind of get me there. And I think that so many times we wait until we think we have everything figured out all the way 100%, like this is the perfect optimal way that I'm going to do this forever before we even start. When what I'm doing in my diet and in my life looks very different than how I started. And even just as I went along that first year, things changed, I would say every month, pretty radically, of like what I was removing from my diet and taking things out and making some changes. Sometimes I was fasting and sometimes I wasn't. It really all just depended on what was working. And so consuming all the free content that I could get my hands on as far as podcasts and YouTube videos and information. Actually, there wasn't even hardly any YouTube videos back then, but there's a lot of good podcasts. I listened to a lot of podcasts from not carnivore, you know, especially back then there really was only the Carnivore Cast. And there was nobody else that was really talking about carnivore. And so it was really good to kind of just consume information from people who talked about fasting and a normal diet and a keto diet and all this metabolic information, you know. And right now there's so much information available that that's also something that helps, right? If you're struggling, if you're having a hard time, if you're, you know, having a lot of cravings, like go for a walk and listen to a podcast or dig into some information. Like those are things that usually learning about something that you could make a small tweak or helps to give you confidence in what you're doing, usually motivate you to like push through and not give in that moment. Or maybe it's just a motivational. I know you listen to a lot of like Andy Frisella and like any kind of motivational podcast. It doesn't have to be nutrition based. It's just something that's going to get you fired up and like committed to like getting it together so that you can push through for one more day.
Yeah. Joan Ifland, she's a food addiction specialist. And she always talks about how when people join her community, they have hour-long sessions where they just talk about healing and just getting rid of the processed foods in our diets. And I think that's the thing is not following these traditions that are not as healthy for us, like this whole eating in moderation and having a little bit of dessert after is not going to kill you. These thoughts, if you start listening to podcasts and videos and content out there that support the new ideology that you're trying to follow, it's really helpful because when you're struggling, when you listen to other people, there was a podcast with Jason Fung and Megan Ramos, and they just shared a lot of stories of people that were really sick and that they started eating either low carb, but doing a lot of fasting and how they healed so many of their ailments. And that podcast, it was just people's stories, but I remember it motivated me when I first went keto because when I was craving sugar, I would listen to people that were food addicts or people that had binge tendencies. And I thought I could be like these people and get out of this eating disorder if I can just be low carb for a while and be consistent. Those podcasts help me stay motivated. I think it's really good to be immersed in the education and information so that when you are struggling, it kind of helps you be motivated to stay consistent.
Dr. Fung and Megan Ramos both were huge instrumental in my journey along the way as well. And I learned so much from them. So they had a lot of, they have a website and a clinic and a podcast, like a lot of really great information that you can get there.
So Laura, what do you do when you have a craving? So let's say you have in your mind that you want to go eat a lollipop. I'm just going to bring that up because I'm assuming most people don't struggle with that. But so in your mind, you're now set on having this lollipop and you keep thinking about it. What do you do when you're craving something like that? Like, how do you get out of it? Or do you just accept and take that lollipop?
For me, it's all about delay and distract. I have to tell myself later, tomorrow, the next time, like I have to delay it and basically tell myself, like, I'm going to allow you to have this, but just not right now. It's this lie I tell myself that I always can end up believing in the moment. Or even maybe it's, I mean, I really do believe it in the moment, is I delay it. And then I try to find myself a distraction. I get out of the house. I talk to my husband. I going for a drive never helps because I drive past too many things and I'm isolated. Like, I can't be alone. That's a part of it. Like, I know I can't be alone driving around because there's access to like so much trash and all of my terrible things that like triggers come up. So that doesn't help. So it's talking to somebody, but it's delaying and then distracting myself. I developed some hobbies over the last couple of years, like as I'm trying to like get out of the kitchen and now, or try to distract myself from food. And it's making sure that I'm addressing kind of what's going on. And so those are the things that usually help. If I can't get it out, it's eat something. It's eat something though, but it's obviously not the carb food. It's like eat some bacon or eat some pork rinds or eat some cheese. If that's the worst thing that happens, like it's not ideal. I don't have that be my first go-to, but at least I'm kind of eating something that I know is approved. I think those are big things. I also, in the beginning, when I knew like, I made a big priority shift in my life of making sure that my health and losing this weight was like one of my number one priorities. Like obviously my kids and my job, but it's like my number one priority. I said no to some things if I was supposed to go somewhere that I knew I couldn't handle the pressure. Like I just wasn't ready to be in this restaurant, to be in this circumstance. Like I said no to things for a while that I thought would be too hard for me to handle. And you might have to say no to that girls' night, or you might have to say no to, listen, we cut out food from our house. Like I quit giving my kids certain things, not because I was worried about them, but because I couldn't handle it. And so I really had to shift like how I was going to live my life for a while. Now it's not a big deal for me to be around some of those things or to be around some of those places, but you know, it definitely has to be the number one priority. So there was kind of a lot in there, but in the moment it's delay and distract and then really just changing up my behavior, where I am, what I'm doing, not sitting on the couch every night watching television, even just sitting in a different location or going for a walk or doing something to distract my hands. I always, you know, a lot of people joke that they take up crocheting, or I did paint my numbers for like a full year just to try to give myself something to do with my hands that was going to make me not think about food or want to eat something mindlessly.
Yeah, it sounds like the delay is really good. And then also just changing your environment and being aware of certain environments that can cause triggers. And I did the same thing when I first went keto and carnivore. I had my husband not have certain foods around that were absolutely triggers for me. And now he can, and it's not, they don't even seem like food to me, but,
right.
But it took me time to get here. A lot of these examples remind me of a lot of the examples that James Clear brings up in Atomic Habits. I highly recommend reading that if you haven't. It talks a lot through, if you want a new life or you want certain habits to stick, what are certain things that you should do to be successful? And he talks about the environment or being friends with people that have the habits so that it becomes easier to mimic and to be around people that have the same value systems as you. So then it's easier to eat meat-based without having to have someone challenge you for eating this way. All of these things are really important. And I did the same things as you too, Laura. I didn't go out sometimes. There was a girls' trip where they were planning meals at Italian restaurants, and I knew I was going to have a really hard time eating. So I didn't go on the trip because I thought it would be too hard. Like we would have group chats where they're like, what snacks should we bring? What bakery should we go to? And I was like, I am not going to be able to handle that well. So in the beginning, I mean, that's just what I needed. So that's where you just have to figure out again, like what works for you. I could totally go on a trip like that now, but at that point in my life, I couldn't have done it.
And this, I think that's a big part of it. Telling yourself that this is a temporary priority shift to make your health your number one priority. And it does get easier over time. It does. It's, I mean, I think, I'm not talking like a month in. I'm not talking even like 3 months in. I am talking like you have to give it amount of time where it's not going to have to be your number one focus every day, all the time. I don't have to be listening to hours and hours of nutritional podcasts anymore right now to keep me motivated and keep me on track. But I did in the beginning. And like you said, you're not saying goodbye to your friends and to events like that forever. It's just a temporary thing to make this your number one priority in order for you to get yourself under control. If you want this to happen, a radical change to happen in a short amount of time. Like, I mean, it's just what has to happen.
Yeah. And I think that's where that pros cons list when you're not on a carnivore diet is super helpful to write down, or when you're just starting, so you can see and really get a pulse of your life and how much you want it to change and how much you think diet can affect that change for you.
The other thing I'll say is that you have to look in the mirror and say that this is my responsibility.
Right.
My health is my responsibility. My lifestyle is my responsibility. And this is not up to a doctor. It's not up to, I mean, you know, work with your doctor on major medical issues. But I actually listened to a podcast today and I'm going to make a post about it. So before this even comes out, this doctor said 80% of your health is based on your lifestyle and the way we live our lives. 80% of your life is based on your lifestyle, whether it's diet and exercise. And I'll even go further myself and add that the majority of that is based on the food you consume. And yes, exercise is a bonus on top of that. But I think the majority of that is the food that you consume and how you treat your body.
Absolutely.
And those are some really radical things. The person who's going to change this for you is you. And it's, you know, it's not about the coach that you hire or the coaching group that you're in, or those are all things that can provide help and support and accountability, but you can't pay somebody to make you want to change enough. And I think that we have to, at the end of the day, know that it is our decisions and it is our own responsibility to make changes in our own lives.
My clients that are the most motivated, that time in and time out, they're very consistent. Those are the people that heal the most. And it's not the people that are just paying me so that I hopefully fix them or give them a magic pill or tell them the magic macros that will make them heal. But it's the people that are willing to go all in and be consistent. Those are the people that heal and then heal for the long term. I don't think carnivore long term is hard. If you Sure, the beginning, there's a lot of habit changes. There's a lot of revisiting things and prioritizing things. But like Laura said, I barely listen to nutrition content as well. I mean, when I do research, I do that. But I don't listen like I used to. I used to be an avid listener of like all things nutrition. And I consume so much. And now that it's part of my lifestyle, it's more about motivation and leadership. And it's different things that I no longer have to even think about. What am I going to put in my mouth today? Sure, my diet may not be 100% strict anymore, but I've healed that much more. And so you can get there, but it's the beginning of being consistent and making health your priority and making meat-based and just wanting to get that pros and cons list where the pros of staying carnivore and getting your health back and getting off meds is actually a dream that can come true. Once you get there, then you can be a little bit more flexible, but you can get there. And that is the whole point of this podcast is, as much as meat-based seems so restrictive, it can actually give you your life back.
And I don't know too many people who stay in that extreme restrictive moment long-term.
Yeah.
You know, most people are over time finding what they can handle and what they can't handle. And I'm not somebody who's going to be eating fruit because I know I can't handle that. And it causes me to want too many cravings and sugar and all those things. And like you said, you had to spend this time in like 100% strict to heal. And then now you're realizing over time, like, what is it that you can handle? Where are your boundaries? And we always know that we can come back to that baseline of, yes, of really strict, to be able to kind of do a reset. And if all of a sudden things are starting to slide, you go back to that baseline. And that's where I think people need to be for a while to be able to figure it out. And let alone, you know, if weight loss is your goal, then hit your goals.
Yeah. In closing, I just wanted to ask you, for all those moments that you didn't cave in to your cheats and your, you know, wanting to try other things that you were craving, how much has your life been benefited by just sticking to meat-based?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's tremendous. I know, especially with over the last 2 years, being healthy and whether it's being sick or not being sick, like there's been the majority of the last 2 years that I haven't been sick. And then obviously when we did have COVID, like I know that my health was drastically prepared and my body was very ready for that. Looking back over the last almost 4 years now that I've been eating this way, I can't tell you the times when I regret not eating something. It's not like, oh, we were on this trip and I missed this food and there was dessert and I didn't have it. And like, it looked so good in the moment. I actually don't remember any of those times. I don't think about the foods that I didn't have. I can't tell you what they are, whether it was a vacation or a work conference. Like, I don't remember what I didn't eat. But I can tell you the times that I felt proud of myself because I pushed through. I know Easter of 2018 was a powerful moment of me in building my confidence, and Christmas of 2018. And I know my birthday of 2020. And like, I know those exact moments where I just felt strong because I pushed through without giving in. And I think that's the important thing, is learning to focus on how this makes us feel from an emotional and physical standpoint, and not dwelling on the specific food items that we might be missing out on.
That's good. Thank you.
Thanks guys for listening today. And we hope you're kicking butt. And if you're not, this is the day. Tomorrow is the day. Today's the day. Don't wait till the first of the month. You can do it.
Yeah. Take it moment by moment, meal by meal.
Thanks for tuning in to the Cutting Against the Grain podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to share and leave us a review and leave any comments and questions on Apple Podcasts. We will read and answer your questions and comments on an upcoming podcast episode. This also helps us to share our real talk with more community members. You can also find me on my other podcast, Nutrition with Judy, on all podcast channels. You can also follow my content on Nutrition with Judy's Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. You can find Carnivore Cure in paperback, ebook, and audio on Amazon. I also have a blog post and weekly newsletter with nutrition and wellness updates. You can sign up at nutritionwithjudy.com. You can find Laura on Instagram at Laura East Bath. You can follow along on her daily stories and see some of her funny skits. You can also find Laura on her YouTube channel, where she shares tips on living a meat-based lifestyle. If you're wondering how much meat to eat in a day, week, or month, Laura has you covered. She also shares how to make a perfect sear on a steak and how extended fasting looks like in real life. You can find her YouTube channel by searching Laura Spath. Thanks again for listening to the Cutting Against the Grain podcast. And remember, make sure to cut against the grain.